From WAMU 88.5 at American University in Washington, welcome to the Politics Hour starring Tom Sherwood. I'm Kojo Nandi. Tom Sherwood is our resident analyst. He's a reporter for NBC4 and a columnist with the Current Newspapers. Tom, we've got a lot on our plate today because with the upcoming Republican convention in Cleveland, we've got a lot of people to talk to who are on their way there.
That's good. And I'll be there on Sunday for NBC4, but I'm anxious to hear what some of our guests have to say today about this convention. It's one of the most unique in American history, I think.
One of the first people we'd like to talk to about that is John Whitbeck. He is chair of the Republican Party of Virginia. He will be joining us by phone from the airport. He's waiting for a plane even as we speak. Joining us in studio is Robert Sinnes. He's a D.C. GOP delegate headed to the Republican convention in Cleveland. Robert Sinnes, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me today.
And if you have questions or comments for Robert Sinnes or John Whitbeck when he joins us, you can call 800-433-8850. You can send email to kojo@wamu.org. Watch the live video stream at our website, kojoshow.org, or shoot us a tweet at kojoshow. Well, Robert Sinnes, you know the news that we now already know, announced by Twitter this morning in advance of what was supposed to be a press conference to announce it, and that is that the presumptive Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump has selected Indiana Governor Mike Pence as his vice presidential running mate. What are your thoughts?
My thoughts on Pence is that Pence might add a little bit of mainstream conservative values to the ticket. Right now, you have a lot of delegates like me that are very uncomfortable with Trump's impending nomination. I, as you know, was elected to serve as a delegate for John Kasich. Our delegation from Washington, D.C. is for Kasich. 9 votes will go to Kasich and 10 votes will go to Rubio, and we intend to keep it that way.
Does anyone have a second choice Trump out of the district? He is the nominee. He's a presumptive nominee. But are you going to support the nominee once you cast your vote?
You know, I'm going to support John Kasich, and that's all I know right now. That is a week away from where we might have to deal with that impending reality. But for now, I know that our delegation is committed to doing what we were elected by the Republican voters at D.C. to do, which is Rubio and Kasich.
A lot of people may not know you. You're in commercial real estate in town. You ran for the Advisory Neighborhood Commission around U Street in the second ward. You're from South Carolina, you just told me. You're in a city where there's, almost 400,000 Democrats registered to vote, and there are, 37,000 Republicans. Mm-hmm. I would ask, why are you a Republican?
Well, interesting question. I agree.
It's a short program, so don't take too long.
Okay. Well, simply in graduate school, I studied my master's of public administration, and I really became opposed to the concept of one-party rule. And I think one of the great things that the D.C. GOP does is we present an alternative. You see that year after year, there are scandals within the D.C. Council, within the D.C. government at large. And one of the things that we're able to do is provide voters an opportunity to say, hey, we need a different voice because it's only up from here. You know, council, we have independents that are really Democrats, and there's no external oversight or nothing against the status quo.
I'm going to get back to the convention, but are there any Republicans on the November ballot?
Yes, we have Carolina Scenic running as an at-large candidate, and we have some other candidates for lesser offices such as school board and the Advisory Neighborhood Commission.
You mentioned that you're a supporter of John Kasich, and that's who you'll be going to the convention as a supporter of. But it's my understanding that the majority of D.C. delegates are never Trump supporters.
Yes.
Does that include you?
That would include me. One condition, I've thought about it, and I do not think I see myself in the position as casting that ballot away from Kasich for Trump. But one of the conditions is that if there was a true appeal from him to reject the platform, as you know, the platform committee recently met and inserted a lot of divisive language, such as anti-LBGT initiatives, support for things like bathroom bills, limiting women in the military. That's something that, as the young youngest delegate from D.C., and just as our larger delegation, we cannot support that being the standard bearer for the next 4 years.
Your delegation is completely out of step with the National Party platform that's going to be ratified apparently on Monday. All the Never Trump issues were defeated yesterday and prior to the convention. Why even go? I mean, you support John Kasich, right? Mm-hmm. He's the governor of Ohio. He ran as a moderate conservative or just a basic conservative governor. He's not going to attend the convention that's in his home state. Why are you even going?
Did you ever consider sitting it out?
No, because when there's a fight and you see a fight that needs to happen and when a larger populace needs to see that there is active resistance against something that could turn potentially detrimental to the country, you need to be able to be there and sit there and stand up when you need to be able to say this is not right, this is not the future of our party.
Don't you think then, why didn't Governor Kasich go? I mean, to do the very thing you just suggested.
Well, I mean, from my understanding, that he will be making an appearance, and he will be around the convention. He has just truly not been invited by the powers that be because Trump is very much in charge, and as you know, Kasich has not been a supporter.
It's my understanding that we have John Whitbeck on the line now. He's the chair of the Republican Party of Virginia. John Whitbeck, thank you for joining us. How close are you to boarding your flight?
About 20 minutes, my friend. Just about to go.
Well, we would like to know what is your opinion of the selection of Indiana Governor Mike Pence as the running mate of the presumptive nominee Donald Trump, which was announced by tweet this morning. What do you think that would mean for the ticket's chances in the general election in the key state of Virginia?
Well, I think it's a great pick. I think Governor Pence is one of the conservative movement's heroes. He's has a good temperament. I think he's a good leader in Indiana. They've gotten a lot of good things done out there. I think he's going to play very well in Virginia. He's the kind of leader that Virginians can get behind, and I think it will help us win Virginia's 13 electoral votes in November.
Here's Tom Sherwood.
Mr. Whitbeck, thanks for joining us. I know you're going to be on the plane. There was a hard-fought contest in Virginia. It seems, but certainly compared to our neighboring state of Maryland, that Virginia is trying to coalesce around the Trump candidacy, now the Trump-Pence candidacy. You have been working to unify the party. Are you making success compared to, say, Maryland, where the governor's not even going to the Cleveland?
Well, I think Governor Hogan is in a different place. I mean, Maryland is not a red state. You know, we're some people call us a purple state. I think we're a red state that just hasn't had its act together for the last few cycles. So, I think Donald Trump got huge numbers in Virginia Beach, and think about this: the 2016 primary, more voters showed up to vote in the Republican primary than in the history of the Commonwealth in either a Democrat or Republican primary. He's the kind of candidate that people can get behind and will get behind. I think we're going to win Virginia.
Well, the dump Trump movement appears to be dead, at least as far as party rules are concerned. But is there any chance that there might be surprises at the convention next week? Are you expecting any? Are you anticipating any?
I'm not anticipating any. I think that movement is dead. I think they had their time, and it just didn't work out. In fact, it wasn't even close, though. But I think overall, everybody's ready to move on and unite behind the nominee, and I'm not worried about any special super surprises or anything like that at the convention.
Tom Sherwood recommends you get a cell phone upgrade, but he also has another question.
No, he's at Dallas. I'm sure there's interference. If you can be near a window, that would be great. I do want to ask you, every national convention, as you well know, there's a local politics playing out, and in the state of Virginia, of course, there's a candidacy for governor. There came campaigns for governor already. How are you going to manage the state politics while you deal with the national politics?
Well, everything that we're doing, that's the great thing about our Team Virginia program. It's the largest youth program in the history of the party, and we're putting it together in 2016, and all the infrastructure we build is going to carry over into 2017. It's all going to be there for our nominee. So it's a perfect example of how the successive elections in Virginia, the off-year elections, actually help us win, and we're really excited about how 16 is going to help us win in 17.
Are you going to be able to get Corey Stewart from Prince William County and Ed Gillespie to stand together in Cleveland?
Absolutely. I think, you know, Ed Gillespie has been a huge help to the party over the years. He's a former party chairman, so he understands the important role the party plays. And Corey Stewart is our Team Virginia co-chairman. He's also the Trump chairman, but he's also part of our overall field program. He's helping us with that, along with former Governor Jim Gilmore. So both of those gentlemen, Gillespie and Stewart, know how important our state is, and they're upstanding guys, and they're going to stand with us, and it's going to be great.
John Whitbeck, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, guys. Thank you so much.
Have a great
John
flight.
John Whitbeck is chair of the Republican Party of Virginia. You're listening to the Politics Hour, where Tom Sherwood is our resident analyst. Our guest in studio is Robert Sinners. He's a D.C. GOP delegate headed to the convention in Cleveland. If you have questions or comments for Robert Sinners, give us a call at 800-433-8850. There was an issue with another D.C. GOP delegate, Rena Shah Barbarara, who has been outspoken in her opposition to Donald Trump, and she was bumped off the delegate list for supposedly not being a D.C. resident. She has since been reinstated after filing a protest with the RNC. But, Robert, do you know what went on in that case, and was reinstating her in any way connected to the push to force an open contest at the convention, which failed yesterday?
Honestly, I'm not too sure about the consequences, sir, what surrounded that, but I am aware that she was not a D.C. resident, and therefore is one of the fundamental platforms to become a delegate is that you have to be a resident and a registered voter within the District of Columbia.
Why did the Credentials Committee change its mind then?
I have actually not read that decision, okay. And I'm not aware of the results.
Well, the Republican National Committee criticized the D.C. GOP for not following standard protocol in assessing her residency, because apparently the D.C. GOP relied on a report from a Breitbart report from the Breitbart website. Do you have additional evidence besides that report that she is not a resident of the District of Columbia?
Again, I was not involved in those proceedings. So
how do you know she's not a resident?
By the report that was issued from the leadership of the party,
What are D.C.'s rules for how delegates vote? Are you obligated to vote for the primary winner?
Obligated to vote for the primary winner
at the convention.
At the convention, we are bound to vote for which candidate we were on the ballot for. I was a Kasich delegate, and I think of the delegates that did prevail, they were Rubio or Kasich. There were a couple that, you know, were Rubio supported delegates and have to vote, Kasich supported delegates that have to vote Rubio due to the fact
for the
that
first vote and
the
then
first vote okay. and then we're free and then we're unbound after that.
Can we expect you the Republicans? I don't think anyone thinks that the Republicans will carry the District of Columbia. Can we expect the D.C. party to use its influence, money, connections, contacts to campaign in Northern Virginia and possibly in Maryland, primarily in Virginia, to help swing Virginia to the Republicans? Or will you try to, I don't know what you call the effort, if you try to do it in the district, try to, in fact, get a competitive race going in the district?
I know that our focus after this, will be to elect local candidates. And organizations that I've been involved with, the D.C. Young Republicans and other organizations that have a libertarian or conservative leaning, will be working in Northern Virginia and Southern Maryland to really elect some of those candidates and get the conversation going. Because one of the biggest fears coming out of this is that what I've heard from the presumptive nominee is really a monologue, whereas I know local Republicans are more interested in forming a dialogue.
Let's talk about the Republican platform. Fellow D.C. GOP member Rachel Hoff was the first openly gay Republican to serve on the platform committee. But earlier this week, all amendments making the platform more inclusive toward the LGBT community were voted down. What do you think it will mean for the party's chances in November, maybe especially with the younger voters?
Nationally, I don't know, but I think that divisive language is something that is really a troubling precedent, because I cannot remember a time in platform discussions in my involvement in South Carolina and my involvement in Washington, D.C., where you have a platform that fundamentally goes back toward a decision that was made recently and wants to set back a what I think is civil rights back to the 70s. I mean, I think that the law has been decided that a man and a woman should be able to find happiness just the same way that a man and a woman should be. And I think that it's a fundamentally troubling precedent that a platform has been set that wants to scale that back. I think that when I think of the fundamental values of the Republican Party, freedom, the ability to choose your own destiny, that just goes against that 100%, and I think it's a very troubling precedent. And I know that I will be pushing to adopt the minority report that was issued by two of our members of the platform committee, Rachel and Chip Nottingham.
I should mention that Rachel Hoff is going to be our guest here on Monday. We'll talk with her by phone from Cleveland, huh?
After the 2012 election, the National Republican Party did a thorough study and said it needed to change its ways. It needed to open itself more to minorities, particularly Hispanics. It needed to do a number of things to move forward. Essentially, none of those things have happened. You now have a nominee who has aggravated, and many people say has insulted, Hispanics, women, others. Do you anticipate, are you just blindly hoping? What gives you any hope that after this election, should Donald Trump lose, that the Republican Party will try to right itself again? And what happens, in fact, if he should win? It would seem to me that you'll be even further outside the orbit.
Well, I mean, both parties have been going outside the center for years now. And I think you're going to see a rubber band effect. That rubber band is going to stretch, and eventually it's going to snap. And I think that when you look at the DNC convention on 2 weeks, I think that you're going to have some language that pushes the platform farther to the left, whereas you're witnessing the RNC pushing the platform farther to the right. And I think that come November, you're going to see a fundamental wake-up call to where we need to be back to the center, be looking to attract crossover voters more than we're doing, and really be able to get back into the mainstream. I mean, if you look at the statistics, a majority of Americans approve of gay marriage. The bathroom bill issue was supported, was inserted into the platform. That's not even a real issue. That's chasing windmills. And I think that you're going to see after the effects of this convention in November on both sides of the political spectrum, I think you're going to see a push towards the center again.
What's the relationship between the local Republican Party members and the national GOP? Or put it another way, when Tom Sherwood comes looking for you on the convention floor, will he have to look behind some large pillar or someplace under the stage to find where the D.C. delegation is?
No, we'll be right on the floor with everybody else. But one of the things...
Do you know yet where your location is in the Quicken Loan Arena or whatever it's called?
We are in the back of the floor. We are.
On the floor?
I do believe on the floor or in the 100s. We are not pushed.
Well, that means you probably won't be able to see the stage because you'll be behind all the cameras.
Well, you know, the location on the floor is not the concern. It's what we're doing behind the scenes to make some things right.
What's that saying? You are where you sit?
Tom mentioned that you ran for ANC of your neighborhood back in 2014. Did you think party affiliation had anything to do with how you fared in that race?
Well, I know that... in that race, first of all, ANC is nonpartisan, and it was an open seat. But one of the things is that my challenger, Nicole Mann, who is a great advisory neighborhood commissioner, has done a great job in the past 2 years. She had been involved and had the support of the outgoing chairman as well as some of the local Democratic establishment, whereas I didn't. But I ran a very hard race. It was within 11 points. And, you know, I did what any good candidate would do. I knocked on every door in the district, had flyers, had signs, and was able to answer any interview request that I got. And I think I attracted a lot of people. I had some some people come to me election day that says, I have never voted for somebody that's a Republican, but you, I voted for you because you're responsive.
Okay. Well, the Advisory Neighborhood Commission, it's for people who don't live in the city. Every about 2,000 people in the city and the neighborhood get to elect someone to represent them on community organizations, advisory neighborhood commissions that kind of guide, and there's like 37 of them around the city to guide people, the government, what to do. Do you anticipate you'll run for office? Are you preparing to run?
I'm not preparing to run this cycle, but I'm staying.
Well, it's too late to run for this cycle.
Well, it's not. You can pick up petitions last week, and the petition getting process does not end until the end of the summer.
Well,
I've thought about it.
Pretty quick. All right.
One of the things you mentioned is that you are the youngest member of the D.C. delegation. I'm absolutely surprised that Tom Sherwood didn't ask you exactly what your age is.
I'm 28 years old.
And how do you know you're the youngest?
I go to the delegation meetings, and I can tell you, hands down, that
you're the youngest. Oh, no, you're the youngest in the D.C. delegation.
I'm not in
our country.
Let the record show that Tom Sherwood is the only person who can ask a follow-up question to what your age is.
At my age, I'm very sensitive to age questions. I think they all should be asked.
Robert Sinners is a D.C. GOP delegate headed to the Republican convention in Cleveland. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
As I said, we have a very packed show today, and joining us by phone now from Cleveland is Carol or Bo Correll, attorney and Virginia GOP delegate. He's also chair of the Winchester Republican Party. Bo Correll, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for being here. Former chair.
You are part, however, currently of the Free the Delegates push at the convention, which would have been the last chance to deny Donald Trump the presidential nomination. The Convention Rules Committee voted yesterday on this. It failed. Can you talk about the conscience clause at the heart of this and about what happened yesterday?
Sure, absolutely. Well, there was a understanding that the rules allowed for unbinding in any event. And in fact, if you look at the historical trend, only once since 1880 have national delegates been bound by national party rules. And the other was 1976 with President Ford. And now we have learned last night that the RNC insider class has done the exact same thing since 1976. So, you know, on the one hand, they're saying, well, delegates are already bound, yet they pass national party rules. Actually, their recommendations are not yet accepted by the floor. They're saying that, well, they weren't bound to start with, yet they, you know, sort of like a one-horse race as they now are recommending 100% binding. Of course, it doesn't make much sense if, you know, they don't think they were, they think they were bound to start with. So, you know, I am associated with the Free the Delegates movement. It's sort of a tapestry of other organizations, other groups. And, you know, this fight's not over yet. Obviously, that was a critical battle that we wanted to win. The votes came up short. One of our biggest champions, what we were trying to do, was Senator Mike Lee.
When you say the fight's not over yet, exactly what do you mean? Because I think party leaders think that they have successfully quashed the dump Trump movement. How can things still be interesting in Cleveland?
Sure. Well, I mean, there's several procedural moves that can happen on the actual floor.
On Monday.
On Monday.
Right.
So, you know, as the communications director from the RNC stated this morning on the Today Show, I mean, this is just proposed rules. So whether or not they're adopted is another matter. We're exploring all options at this current time of what the next step is, whether it's going to be Monday or if it's, you know, 4 years from now.
You objected, and legally objected, to the state law that said you had to vote for the person for whom that you were elected to represent. Why shouldn't you be expected, as a person of goodwill and your word, if you get elected to support someone, why shouldn't you be required, at least on the first ballot, to support that person?
Well, look, keeping one's word is the most important thing, and I have done that.
How were you elected? Let's let people know. How were you elected a delegate?
Sure. Other states have pledges where you write your name down. You're like, I'm going to support Donald Trump, or, you know, I'm going to support candidate X or Y. That's not how it's done in Virginia. In Virginia, you're elected, and there's proposed state rules Maryland National Party rules when they actually adopted Trump State Party rules, but that apportioned delegates. So, you know, I never once committed to support Donald Trump. In fact, 65% of Virginia voters in the primary voted against Donald Trump.
Okay, so but let's be clear for people listening to us, though. You're a delegate to the convention. Did you get elected saying you would support any particular candidate?
Yes.
Okay, who was that candidate?
That was Ted Cruz.
Ted Cruz.
My position now is a little bit different.
I know, but I'm just trying to bring people up to speed of where we are. You were elected as a Ted Cruz delegate.
Mm-hmm.
And now that
not a Ted Cruz delegate. It's a delegate that said, if you send me there, I will support Ted Cruz.
You will support Ted
Cruz. When he was still in the race.
And so he's not. And then why are you being made to vote for, made to be voting for Trump?
There's something to be teased apart. So in roughly 20 states, including in Virginia, there are delegate binding statutes. These statutes, while they don't affect in a meaningful way, at least one could say, the operation in the actual convention itself, it is a impediment to delegates voting their conscience. So in Virginia, before our lawsuit that I was the plaintiff in, 100% of delegates had to vote for Donald Trump, even though he got 35% of the vote, where they were committing misdemeanors. And
don't get distracted. I'm going to be clear why you have to vote for Trump.
Well, a federal judge finally agreed with you, and he blocked Virginia from enforcing the law that you're talking about that would have required all of the state's GOP delegates to vote for the win of the presidential primary. But now that's been described as something of just a symbolic victory, because delegates, it's my understanding, are bound in the end by national party rules. Is that correct?
Well, it removes the threat of coercion from the state. So in order for this to have been successful at the very end, it's a three-part process. You know, we want to remove the legal impediments. Remember, if you're in court, you can't wave around a national party rule. I mean, a judge is going to say, well, that doesn't apply to this state's court. So, you know, we wanted to remove the impediment that delegates feared repercussions under state law using well-established precedent, fight it in the Rules Committee, and fight it on the floor. You know, FreeTheDelegates.com and our associated groups such as Delegates Unbound and others, you know, this victory is actually a victory for not just, you know, the means to the end, but also it's a victory that, you know, we don't want the government coming in and telling private organizations, whether or not the Democratic Party or not.
Right. Well, you won that battle. You won the battle. The state can't pass a law telling you to obey the RNC rules. But now the Virginia delegation going to Cleveland is going to vote for Trump, and you're saying you do not want to vote for Trump. Is that right?
Well, the legal thing's out of the way, okay?
Right.
0% are bound under statute to Trump. Now, the next thing is the apportionment of delegates. So
done by the party.
I'm so glad you're a lawyer, Bo.
I mean, it's not intuitive, right? So it's really not.
Well, and nor do I think the listeners have a patience for a great deal of this. But if you get your way, you will be able to do what? Why can't you just abstain if you don't want to vote for Trump?
Right. I'm not going to be voting for Trump, you know, one way or the other. And I just don't think he's fit for nomination.
So what are you going to do?
Where it needs to be. I'm going to vote for someone else. You know, we were leading up to this fight. We wanted and right now there's actually petitions being circulated to by other state delegations. We're not running that.
But if you do that, wouldn't you then be in violation of the party of the rules voted in at the convention? And what would be the penalty for doing that?
They would just be ruled out of order and your votes won't count.
Well, that is a different effort from, you know, like I said, this is a tapestry of different organizations and groups of delegates that just really do not want Donald Trump. So that might mean, you know, submitting a name for Ted Cruz or something like that under one of the rules. But I'm of the position that, you know, I fought the battle that needed to be fought, and so delegates are unbound under state law. And so, yeah, it was potentially symbolic in other states, but it added to the momentum leading up to the convention and the Rules Committee.
Okay. I would just, the Never Trump people lost everything, every vote yesterday. I think it was every vote yesterday. The Never Trump people have had their hats handed to them, that the expectations there would be a great many of Never Trump votes, they're simply not materializing. Now, some people say that's because the party and the pro-Trump people have organized well and whipped people up to vote for mm-hmm. the party. It seems to me that you're going to November. All your work, if I were looking at it as a Republican, everything that you're doing here is undermining the Trump's ability to get a good bounce out of a convention that unites behind him and sends the nominee off to do battle with Hillary Clinton. Are you saying you're going to risk the Republican Party losing to Hillary Clinton to keep
Absolutely
your way?
Not. And in fact, this effort was aimed at actually putting a candidate in that we believe can defeat Hillary Clinton.
Will you support Trump if he's the nominee?
What's that?
Will you support Trump if he is the nominee of the party after all the machinations?
I support the nominees of the Republican Party. Okay. That might be local office. That might be whatever.
Does it include Trump?
Hillary Clinton has got to be defeated. She's absolutely betrayed her fidelity to her office as Secretary of State. Look.
Trump would tell you that you're not helping.
Go ahead.
Trump would tell you you're not helping.
Well, I'm not going to hurt.
Here's Elizabeth in Washington, D.C. Elizabeth, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. I'm really glad to be speaking to somebody who's a delegate to the Republican convention. I am a lifelong Democrat. Sir, have you gone to many conventions?
This is my first national convention, but I've been to state and local stuff.
Well, I'm old enough to remember the 1968 Democratic Convention in Chicago, where there was chaos in the streets because of a lot of war demonstrators and Mayor Daley's cops. There was chaos inside the convention.
And you're expecting that there are likely to be demonstrations in Cleveland also, and you'd like to know what's likely to happen there?
Well, I'm interested to, usually when you watch a Republican convention on television, it's all happiness and light and a really good production. But do you think there is going to be unease, disruption within the hall by delegates? And do you have any idea what you guys are going to be looking at that the media will be covering in the streets of Cleveland?
Sure. Well, I can't really speak to what's happening outside. I do expect. Now, remember, this isn't necessarily anti-Trump. What we had here was GOP insiders strong-arming the delegates at large come Monday in their Rules Committee, with very little precedent since 1880. So what you're going to see is I expect huge dissatisfaction. They want a very nice televised event. While I'm not organizing anything, I certainly know that other factions are really, really displeased with the strong arm tactics utilized by RNC insiders. So
you're suggesting that there may not be a very nice televised event?
Who knows? You have a lot of pent up anger by the grassroots being a lot of times in reasonable debate, you allow the minority at least the ability to express their standpoint in a great fashion, even if they're going to not be triumphant in the end. Here we had just a shuddering of the right of RNC delegates and their right to at least be heard on some topics.
Well, you said this wasn't particularly anti-Trump, but, when you call yourselves Never Trump, I think it seems somewhat anti. But, the Democrats on the House floor sat in on the House floor and at the well of the House and tried to demand a vote on gun matters. Do you anticipate that, as the caller, the lifelong Democrat said, do you anticipate... Not that you'll do it, but do you anticipate mm-hmm. that there will be disruptions on the floor that will make the Republican Party look not organized and hurt its chances in November?
Look, I think this is more of a dissatisfaction with how people were strong-armed in a manner method that has very rarely been seen before. So how that will manifest itself, I can't tell you. But I will tell you that, Republicans in general, myself, we like to follow the rules. We want input on the rules. But, I don't anticipate type of civil disobedience.
You personally are not going to do that.
No, I'm not going to be sitting down in front of Paul Ryan. I might yell at him, but that's about it.
Carol Bocorell is an attorney and Virginia GOP delegate, former chair of the Winchester Republican Party. He is in Cleveland, where he joined us by phone. Thank you very much for joining us.
I really appreciate it. Love your show.
Thank you. Also joining us from Cleveland now is Joe Cluster. He is the executive director of the Maryland Republican Party. Joe Cluster, thank you for joining us.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
If you have questions or comments for Mr. Cluster, give us a call at 800-433-8850. Go to our website, kojoshow.org. Watch the live video stream. Send us a tweet at Kojo Show or email to kojo@wamu.org. Joe Cluster, how would the Trump-Pence ticket, in your view, play in Maryland?
Maryland is a historically more Democrat state than say Virginia, like your last caller. So we always have an uphill battle going into presidential elections. But with the popularity of our Republican Governor Larry Hogan, I do believe that people are giving Republicans a second look in Maryland, and we'll see how it goes. I don't have any thoughts that we're going to somehow pull the state out for Donald Trump.
But that very popular governor, as Tom Sherwood is anxious to point out, has been openly critical of Donald Trump. You can pick it up from there, Sherwood.
Well, the question. You've been asked it a zillion times. The Republican leadership of Hogan, which is focusing more on his reelection in 2018, he bowed out. He said he was for Chris Christie. When that didn't happen, don't ask me any more stupid questions about Trump, I think was the quote, or something like that.
Yeah, no, look, like our governor has been on record as saying that he's currently cannot vote for Donald Trump. But he's focusing on Maryland, and his popularity is still pretty high in Maryland. So, the Maryland Republican Party is 100% behind our governor and 100% behind our presidential nominee, Donald Trump. Sometimes we can, support two candidates who might not see eye to eye. But, look, the Maryland Republican Party and the delegates here in Cleveland are very excited to be here for Donald Trump, and they're very excited to work for the Republican Party in Maryland. And, when the governor's reelection comes, I truly believe that they will be there for our Republican governor, too.
Do you think Pence helps the Republican ticket?
I think it does. It brings a governor with experiences of managing a state to be, right-hand man for Donald Trump, who is a great manager of businesses but has never, been involved in government. So I think it delivers a strong social conservative, who can bring a lot of the Ted Cruz people into the fold. He's going to be there to help Donald Trump understand the nuances of government when Donald Trump becomes the next president of the United States.
The Maryland Republican Party largely is, I would say, moderate conservative moderate. As you go around the state and you see what's happening, do you get a sense people listen when Trump says he's going to build a wall, or when he wants to, as Newt Gingrich said this week, let's ask every Muslim in the country, if you follow Sharia law, and if you do, we're going to deport you. That kind of edge to the national politics, does that undermine your ability to build the party in Maryland, or do you go along with it?
Well, I mean, look, there is merit in what they're saying. Look, we have an illegal immigration problem in this country. And we have a problem of domestic terrorism also. I think they need to choose their words, a little bit more carefully, not to alienate, hardworking Hispanic Hispanic Marylanders who will give Republicans a vote every once in a while, or Muslim Americans who are willing to work with the Republican Party on certain issues. I truly believe there's an issue that they're hitting at. I just hope that they don't alienate people by being a little too strong with their message. But their message is resonating with voters because it needs to be talked about. We need to talk about illegal immigration, and we need to talk about terrorism that's going to hit our shores and has hit our shores recently in San Bernardino and in Orlando.
You said that Maryland Republicans were 100% behind Governor Hogan and 100% behind Donald Trump, but I was led to understand that the governor's outspoken comments may have caused a split in the Maryland Republican Party.
Well, only in the media. So, I mean, I was in the governor was walking in the Dundalk parade the other day, and Dundalk's a very blue-collar area that the governor got about 74% in and is a huge Donald Trump area. And they were totally excited to see him. They were happy he was there. Look, the Maryland Republicans understand what this governor is doing for us in this state. This is the first time that Maryland has actually stopped some of the progressives' ideas going through Maryland, actually cutting some of their taxes, some of their fees, some of their regulations, and making Maryland more open for business. And I think the people will give him a pass on his non-support of Donald Trump.
That was Governor Hogan's campaign thing, that he would cut back on all these fees and different things, and he's done that. He's succeeded against a Democratic legislature. Now,
he's definitely doing what he's promised to do.
You have not, you really haven't spent any time, as most Republicans do, attacking Hillary Clinton. Would you like a moment for that?
Well, I've always been an ABC voter, anybody but Clinton, and in this country, we are going to have the option of either voting for Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. I understand there are third party candidates running, with the Libertarian ticket and the Green Party ticket. But when it comes down to it, this is a two party country, and we have to decide who we would want to vote for. And that's either Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. And, I can look at Hillary Clinton and see years and years of being the inside Washington person. And I think people are tired of having the insider being elected. You look at Maryland, we had a total outsider win our governor's race. And I think Donald Trump is the quintessential outsider running for president. And, I hope the voters of Maryland and the country, realize that these D.C. insiders are starting to destroy our country, and we need to take it back.
Here's John in Washington, D.C. John, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Kojo. My question really relates to the conscience clause, and I'd really like to understand how bound these delegates really are. What if it's discovered that a candidate is a racist? And it's undisputed. They've got him on video. He's got membership to the Ku Klux Klan. It has to be that people can vote their conscience if some discovery happens before the nomination. Otherwise, it's sort of like a dead letter. We're forcing people to vote for someone who's unelectable. There has to be. So I don't know if any of your guests are able to talk about this, but to me, there has to be some basis to allow delegates, if someone's charged with a crime but not yet convicted, to say, I can't support that person. And what impact have the rule changes that were discussed earlier on your program had on the ability of people to vote their conscience?
Joe Cluster, what's your view of the conscience clause?
So every 4 years, the Maryland Exec Board, which is all our county chairman and our elected executive board, vote on our rules that we bound and that we determine how our convention delegates are bound. We have to submit that in October of the year before the primary, okay? And if we change our rules in any form or fashion, we will be docked delegates, okay? The RNC takes our rules and says, this is how your delegates are bound. Yes, we can put a clause in there that would, say, well, if somebody's convicted of a crime, we can unbound our delegates, or if somebody's found to be, not a Republican, and we could unbound our delegates, but that is not in our rules.
And also, just to be clear, there's no candidate who's facing
correct.
Criminal charges this year that I'm aware of.
Right, or been a member of the Ku Klux Klan.
That's right.
Here is George in Woodbridge, Virginia. George, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Kojo. I don't know if you're the person from Virginia, the delegate is still there, but
no.
the other gentleman from Maryland might answer my question. I understand his concern and his initial support of Ted Cruz. And when Ted Cruz lost, he went all the way to court to get some of their, whatever it is they're arguing about.
That was Bo Carell that we spoke with earlier, yes.
Right. He lost.
Okay. And then you can continue to have your fight at the convention. But at the end of that meeting, if there is a Republican nominee, he should support that nominee 100%. Otherwise, he has no business being a Republican or trying to still get Ted Cruz, who has lost, to be his next nominee. I just don't understand that.
Mr. Cluster?
Yeah, so full disclosure from my side of you, I was a Rubio supporter, but I've always been an ABC voter, anybody but Clinton, and as soon as our nominee was chosen, that was who I would support 100%. I really believe that the Republican Party is a party made up of individuals, which is a good thing. We're not a collective like the Democrat Party. Bernie Sanders is part of the collective. You know, he talked about how bad Hillary Clinton is, but as soon as he had his chance, he became part of the collective and endorsed the nominee. You know, I like the individual.
I don't understand the distinction you're making. I don't understand the distinction you're making between.
I'm trying to say that I love the individualness of the Republican Party to our detriment. Sometimes it hurts us. Okay. Sometimes Republicans being for or against Republicans hurt us. But that's what's great about our party is that we allow the individual to flourish. We don't just sit them in a corner and say, you will do X, Y, and Z. My job as the executive director of the Maryland Republican Party is to try to get as many Republicans in the state of Maryland to support our nominee and get him elected. Yeah. I will do that. But, you know, I am not going to sit here and criticize somebody who says they cannot vote for Donald Trump. That is their choice. That is their opinion. And that is their duty as a citizen and as a Republican. So, you know, I, as an individual, back Donald Trump 100% and will do what I can to get him elected.
On that basis, you know, we talked about the governor and the lieutenant governor not going, and your Senate nominee, Kathy Saliga, is not going to be going to the convention. But on a broader picture, as you look to winning the White House back and keeping the Senate, the Bush family, complete Bush family, not going. Mitt Romney, your nominee in 2012, whom you supported, not going. John McCain, who you supported, I presume, in 2008, not going.
Who has endorsed Trump, though?
Endorsed him, but it's not going because he's got a tough fight. Marco Rubio was going to go, was going to appear at the convention, at least go, but he's now not going because he's running for the Senate. John Kasich, the governor of Ohio, he has said he's not going to go. He's certainly not speaking. Lindsey Graham, an outspoken anti-Trump person from South Carolina. Seven senators, at least seven or eight senators on the ballot this year, Republicans, are not going to go to the convention. It seems to me that makes your job that much harder.
It does. I mean, I will not be I'm not going to say a lie here and say when the governor came out and said that he wasn't supporting Trump, my phones didn't ring for a couple days straight about people who were upset about it. But, you know, it comes down to what I think makes the Republican Party a great party is that we're a party of individuals. You know, we believe in the power of the individual. We support the person, you know, who they are, not based on what we think they should be, unlike the Democrat Party, who puts everybody into a category and says, you will be this person.
Is Governor Hogan, and how much support has Governor Hogan lost among Republicans in terms of his reelection bid, given his strong stand, if any?
Well, I don't know, because he's not running this time around. We will see in 2018. We will see if Republicans, you know, hold it against him for doing what he's done. But I don't see that happening, because Republicans in Maryland, we very seldom win. You know, we've had two Republican governors in the last 50 years. And I really believe that the Republicans will understand that that reelecting Larry Hogan is the most important thing for the Republican Party in Maryland. It will change Maryland for the next 20 years.
Well, there are other
years.
Things that are important to the Republican Party in Maryland. Maryland's famously geographically challenged congressional district map was
True.
Challenged in court Tuesday by an American University law student who says the boundaries violate the First Amendment rights of Republican voters. The case had been thrown out, but was revived by a Supreme Court ruling, so it goes back again. We know what you're hoping will happen, but what do you think will be the outcome this time? What do you think will be different this time?
Well, I don't know what the outcome is going to be, but the way we can change those congressional districts is reelecting Larry Hogan, because then he will be responsible for drawing fair maps. And he's already said he would leave it into the hands of the independent commission to draw those lines. That is why I say Larry Hogan's reelection is so important, because if you want to change those gerrymandered congressional lines, you need to vote for Larry Hogan in 2018. I'm not putting my hope and faith in the court system, because somehow they never see anything wrong with what the Democrats do in gerrymandering. But in cases like Virginia, North Carolina, Texas, they always find something wrong with what Republicans done. So, you know, I don't put any faith in the judicial system saying that these maps are gerrymandered, even if you just sit there and look at them with the naked eye and realize they're gerrymandered. What I put my faith in is the citizens of Maryland and them reelecting Governor Larry Hogan, because in 2020, when the census comes out, he will have the maps drawn the following year, and they will be fair. Same on the legislative district side, on the House and Senate side in the state of Maryland. He will draw fair maps, and we'll have a more representative government in Annapolis and in D.C. Look, the Maryland Republican Party is very strong in the state of Maryland, but we're very blue in Annapolis and in the D.C. area, in the D.C. congressional delegation, because of the gerrymandered redistricting that Governor O'Malley, you know, put in 10 years ago. So
let's go back to the committee. Are you in Cleveland now?
No, I'm on my way to Cleveland right now.
All right, I was going to ask you about the security issues there, given the horrific attack.
We only have about a minute left.
But let me ask you a question. Are you sorry that you won't be going to the J. Millard Taw's crab and clam bake that you're going to be missing by being in Cleveland?
I've been there 14 times in my career, so I it's the same every year, and I will miss it because it is a fun event. But as for security concerns, I am a little concerned. I'm not going to lie. I'm very concerned about all the different, you know, people coming into Cleveland that could somehow do something. So I am a little nervous. And the caller from D.C., you talked about the 68 event. You know, I am a little fearful that something might happen.
Well, just be safe, and all of the delegates be safe.
Joe, yeah, we will. Thank you very much for
Joe
having me.
Joe Cluster, the executive director of the Maryland Republican Party. Joe Cluster, thank you so much for joining us.
You're very welcome. Have a nice day.
Tom Sherwood, when do you depart for Cleveland?
I'll be going Sunday morning. I thought those were really good conversations, though, from Virginia and Maryland. You know, they understand the uphill battle they have in their own two states. But, you know, Virginia is a toss-up state. Maryland is not. This is so much different from 2012, when the Republican Party said it was going to reorient and fix things, and it's gone more conservative than it ever was. So I just think it's going to be really interesting. Everyone who's gone is somewhat worried about the disruptions that may occur. The Secret Service has cordoned off a huge area for secure zone.
We'll see. Looking forward to your reporting from Cleveland. Tom Sherwood is our resident analyst. He's a reporter for NBC4 and a columnist with the Current Newspapers. That's it for the show today, but there's always more happening on our website. You can browse the show's archives. A lot of people are talking about whether U.S. Senator Tim Kaine is going to be Hillary Clinton's vice presidential running mate. We talked with him in June about the politics of gun control. We've got even more digital content for you at the Kojo Show blog. Producer Avery Kleinman spoke earlier this summer with a Virginia man whose voting rights were restored earlier this year when Governor Terry McAuliffe ordered the restoration of voting rights for thousands of felons. That's at kojoshow.org/blog. And be sure to meet us back here Monday at noon. D.C.'s openly gay Republican member of the party's platform committee got shut down on LGBT-friendly amendments. She'll join us to discuss that, plus how Donald Trump as president might or might not fit into D.C.'s culture. Until then, thank you all for listening. I'm Kojo Nandi.
The Kojo Nandi Show is produced by Michael Martinez, Angelisa Schrobsdorf, Taylor Burney, Ruth Tam, Elizabeth Weinstein, Avery Kleinman, and Raynell Cooper. The engineer is Meg Bunting. Podcasts of all shows and audio archives are available at our website, kojoshow.org.
Thanks for listening to the Kojo Nandi Show, and if you're already a member of WAMU 88.5, thank you for your support. If not, it's easy to give online at wamu.org. Just click the donate button, and thanks.